Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Might want to turn your mic on.
There we go.
It wasn't. I pushed it down. What do I? You think I actually work for a radio station, right? My name is Christopher Price.
Or a website.
Or a website devoted to a radio station.
First thing he says to me is, I don't hear anything out of these headphones. And I said, turn the things on.
Turn the blankety blanket things on. Dopey. My name is Christopher Price, sitting in for John Rook here on Patriots Playbook, joined in studio by Eric Scalavino from Patriots.com and Patriot Football Weekly. How you doing, buddy?
What's up? You got the. We dressed exactly alike.
We did.
Too.
Well, we called each other, so that's
it's going to be. We're co-hosting the show. We have to
so
look like,
cute.
Yeah, I know, huh?
We have to host the show together. This is great. I'm very excited to be a part of this. We have a great show today coming up at 2:15. Peter King from Sports Illustrated is here. At 3 o'clock, Russell Baxter from ESPN will also be joining us to talk a little Patriots as well as take us around the National Football League. But we want to open with a look back and a look ahead. The Patriots, 7 weeks into the regular season, this is a pretty good time. This is almost the ideal time for the bye week to kind of take stock of where they are 7 weeks in and then kind of looking ahead. I think that this team, it's my personal take, that this team is, it's a tough team to get a handle on because there have been some injuries, there's a lot of new faces, and even 7 weeks in, there's been a lot of movement back and forth, and frankly, they played some good teams, they played some bad teams.
Yep.
It's tough to really get a read on where this team is, even though they're sitting 5-2 right now, mm-hmm. first place in the AFC East.
I know it's going to sound weird to say, but they come off 2 straight weeks where they really blew out their opponents, but to me, they weren't convincing victories because of the quality of the opponent. You know, if they'd beaten the Colts 35-7,
then you got something.
If, you know, if they'd beaten the Steelers 59-0, I'd be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
I like that they're 5-2. I kind of expected that that's about where they would be. Worst case scenario, 5-2 at this point. But you're right. It's hard to get a read on them because of all of the change, the new faces. You want to give them some benefit of the doubt and some leeway because of all of the turmoil, all of the change that they've had this offseason and throughout training camp and all the way till now, even shuffling the roster at the very last minute, the last couple of weeks. But at some point, the team has to come together and you have to know where you are as a team. And I think between weeks 8 and 12 is when that typically happens mm-hmm. in a season. So we're right on the cusp of finding out really what kind of team they have here. And right now is the perfect time to have that bye week and to sort of take a step back and heal up a little bit because they certainly need that.
And looming over everything is the quarterback situation. You know, the first few weeks of the season, he was working with new receivers. He clearly, by his own admission, was not in sync with a couple of the guys on this team. And it again, you know, you take it with a grain of salt because it was the last 2 weeks against some not-so-great opposition, but he's looked better. He's looked better mechanically. Mm-hmm. He's done the things that he's needed to do to get the job done. I think that there were moments in that game against Tampa Bay this past week where he almost looked, I don't want to say, he almost looked a little bit bored. He almost looked a little bit, the offense seemed to lose a little bit of their focus from time to time just because, you know, the quality of the competition, I think, more than anything else. But going forward, you said that a team is usually defined by what they do in weeks 8 through 12. And you can really point to that, and you can really say, you know what, this is the kind of team that we're dealing with here. I think one of the reasons that we're going to get a real handle on them going forward is their schedule, the next 4 or 5 games. You can look at, they are home on November 8th after the bye week on November 1st. They're home November 8th against Miami. They are at Indy on the 15th, home against the Jets on the 22nd, and then they're at New Orleans and at Miami the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think this 5-week stretch sets up very nicely for us to be able to say, you know what, this is a team that has legitimate Super Bowl aspirations, or you can say this is a team that's good, but they're not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with that that analysis, especially with it the schedule coinciding with that time of year when you typically find out what kind of team you have. More so than any other year, I think this year it's really going to be telling because of those games you cited there. And it's, you know, it's not going to be over if they lose three of those five games. I see them going 6-3
mm-hmm.
in these last nine games. 11-5, that should be good enough to win the AFC East, get them at least one home playoff game. At this point, though, I'm not ready to say that they're a Super Bowl team, Super Bowl winning team. I think they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not confident as I've been in years past that they're where they need to be yet. But again, we'll find out. I think in the next month or so. November is going to be brutal.
It is.
If they get through November with two losses, I think they're well positioned to make a run at the Super Bowl.
Now, we can start thinking big picture here. We could kind of look down the road a little bit, and you can look at the rest of the AFC, and you can say, well, you know, Denver's got out to a pretty good start, and if they continue on their current pace, given the fact that the AFC West is as bad as it is, we can look at that team and that division and say, well, you know what, that team is probably a safe bet to get one of those first two spots. You can also look at, and this is granted, we're looking down the road. We're going way, 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 way down the road, probably too far down the road for our purposes. But you can also look at, I think, you can look at Indianapolis at this point, as you guys were talking about on your show a little bit earlier, about them being in that same kind of position. Now, if you look at that and you can see, you can look at those two teams would have that first week bye. And I think that it would be nice for this team to get that bye, but if they don't, they would have to travel the same road that they did back in 2006, where they host the wild card. They either host a wild card game, they have a week off. Those two teams to get that week off, I think would be big in years past for this team because it was older, because it was a little bit banged up at the end of the year. This year, I don't think it's as important. Again,
right,
we're looking way down the road here, but let's just kind of, you know, play pretend hypothetically.
Right. You know, the loss to Denver at Denver was huge for, you know, several reasons, and one of them is obviously playoff seeding if it comes down to a tie and who gets that and whatnot. But I'm not really scared of Denver after having seen the way the Patriots played out there, a place where they typically don't play well. They actually didn't play too badly. There were a couple of plays towards the end that
they had
didn't
one bad
make.
Half.
Yeah,
and just the one bad half.
And just a couple of plays where even despite the bad half, if they had made one or two of those plays, they win that game in regulation. It doesn't even go into overtime. So I'm really not confident in Denver being an elite team right now, mm-hmm. even though their record says that they are. Mm-hmm. I don't feel it with them. I don't fear them the way I would fear, say, a Pittsburgh or an Indianapolis or a New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get that sense that, I mean, yes, their defense is better, but I don't know. I wouldn't be as concerned if we had to go back to Denver and play them, whereas in years past I would have mm-hmm. been terrified to go back to Denver. I'm more concerned with beating Indy at Indy
mm-hmm.
and making sure that if that comes down to a tiebreaker, they have to come here in January.
As opposed to having
to go back to the Dome in January. And the New Orleans thing I think is going to be an interesting barometer to see if they have to meet up with this team again. It would have to be in the Super Bowl. And just exactly what kind of team they are, because they've played some cupcakes, too, and beaten up on some teams. So when they actually start playing some good teams, then I think we'll really see what kind of team New Orleans is, too.
True. That's a good point. Well, we are here on Patriots Playbook. My name, again, is Christopher Price. I'm here with Eric Scalavino. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. That number again is 508-543-7482. Coming up a little bit later on the show, Peter King from Sports Illustrated, as well as Russell Baxter from ESPN. Again, we're looking back and kind of looking forward here at this point at the Patriots season, the 2009 Patriots season. What for you was the biggest surprise over the first seven games of this Patriots season? Was it Tom Brady? Was it something that, you know, his reacclimation process? Was it the failed Joey Galloway experiment? Was it the return of Junior Seau? What stood out for you? What was the biggest surprise for you, Eric, over the first 7 months, first 7 weeks?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. The failed Joey Galloway experiment. There were a lot of high hopes for him coming into the season, possibly being able to surpass the type of production that Dante Stallworth gave this team in 2007 as the third receiver, and it never materialized. I mean, this is a guy who was a high first-round pick, who has had multiple 1,000-yard seasons at previous teams, has been a number one receiver, and comes here and looks like he doesn't know which way is up or down. Mm-hmm. It was baffling.
And it just never worked.
It never seemed to click with
there
him.
There was never a moment where you looked at him on the. He never appeared comfortable, and there was never a moment where he and Brady appeared to be in sync. There was never a moment where you could look at a pass and say, "Wow, that was a great hookup." You know, you saw what Brady was trying to do there. You saw what Galloway was trying to do there. You know, they were operating at a different level. You never saw that from this.
And that's going to have repercussions down the road here, because other than Moss and Welker, who have had their injury struggles so far this season, it hasn't really affected too much what they've done on the field, because when they've played, they've been productive as always. But if, you know, they've been getting by with those injuries. If, God forbid, something happens to either one of them and they're out for an extended period, we have nothing but rookies and young players behind them. It was imperative to get a guy like Galloway, who's a veteran, who's gone through this process before, he's been to the playoffs, he's been on winning teams, he's put up numbers. To have a presence like that on this team, I thought was needed and necessary, just for from a support standpoint, but also in case, like I said, in case the worst happened to one of those other two, you'd have someone you could rely on to step in and be the go-to guy. I still can't believe that it turned out the way it did for him.
On paper, it looked like a perfect combination. I agree.
Sure.
It looked like a perfect combination. Absolutely. It looked like the kind of guy who signed to a one-year deal. It's a guy who wants to go out on top, wants to win a ring, wants the chance to play with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And it just never meshed.
He's had several thousand-yard seasons within the past 5 years as a Buccaneer on a team that, and you know, they haven't been a great team, and he was still putting up numbers there. You would think with the weapons around him here, I'm at a loss. I really don't know why things didn't work out with him, and that's clearly the biggest disappointment, and the one I think, like I said, is going to have repercussions down the road, because they're going to be juggling that wide receiver roster for the rest of the year. They already had to sort of force feed Brandon Tate off of the NFI list to get, and they gave him, I mean, first play he had on the field, they gave him the ball. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to get him as much experience as quickly as possible.
A week's worth of practice, too.
And he was in there, and he was contributing. And you know, they went to him deep on a pass that Tom Brady underthrew. He had the defense beat. It would have been a touchdown, long touchdown. Mm-hmm. It would have been great to see that. So they clearly think the kid has talent. I'm a little apprehensive about his having to come in so soon and contribute right away. But, you know, maybe in the long run, that's a silver lining, because, you know, maybe he'll need to get up to speed quicker because he's contributing so much.
Are you of the opinion, and I've gone around and around with this with a couple of different folks, both with callers over at EEI and readers and listeners and all sorts of other folks, about that maybe you don't need a third wide receiver in this offense. Maybe you don't need a traditional, and I'm putting up quote fingers here, traditional wide receiver in this offense. You can have a guy like a Kevin Faulk. Maybe you can split Lawrence Baroni out there. That you don't need a traditional number three pass catcher, because there's so many other offensive options on this team. We haven't even talked about the wide receivers, we haven't even talked about the tight ends. You can flex a running back out there. I'm of the opinion that you need a number three wide receiver, because traditionally, more often than not, your guy, the number two wide receiver, is the other guy who's split wide. Your traditional number two is not the guy in the slot like the Patriots have. You need a third guy to be able to stretch that field, to be able to draw coverage away from Welker, to be able to draw coverage away from Moss, to be able to open things up underneath. And I don't think you can do that with, say, Kevin Faulk, if you put him out there on a regular basis.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd rather have that third wide receiver in the traditional sense. If they don't have it, I don't think that destroys their entire offense. They still have enough playmakers where they could get, you know, they could get done what they need to do. But I don't think they'd be as effective or as potent without that third guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather have somebody who can take that on than not. You know, I don't want to have to rely on a running back, even as one as reliable as Kevin Faulk, to be lined up wide and catching passes on a regular basis. It's great you know, as an option here and there out of the backfield. But I'd rather have a wide receiver pass catcher whose job that is to be out there and do it. Yeah, they're getting production out of Benjamin Watson, somewhat surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might be just at the point in his career where he's just so comfortable accepting what his role has become that he's actually doing better because of it. Maybe he's not thinking too much as about his future,
which
or
has
what
been
happens,
a problem in years past.
Which has been a problem, and he's already. I was crunching some numbers for a story I'm writing about him, and he already has four touchdown catches. We're not even at the official halfway point of the year. That puts him on pace to break his previous single season touchdown career high of six, just 2 years ago. He's getting, and he hasn't even started every game this year. So they're getting some production out of him, which I think is there's something they've always wanted is a productive tight end to augment the three receivers and the running game. And I think they have that now, but now the problem is they've lost that third receiver threat, or at least a consistent one.
Mm-hmm. Give us a call. The number here is 508-543-7482. You can also send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. We're talking about some of the more impressive things, some of the more surprising things, some of the more disappointing things that have happened to the Patriots over the first half of the 2009 season. And again, we're looking forward as well. That's not to say that we're, completely, not looking forward. We're looking forward to the stretch that the Patriots have over the next 4 or 5 weeks. Again, we've talked about this before, but after the bye week this weekend, you have a home game against Miami. You have Indianapolis on the road. You have a home game against the Jets. And then you have home games against New Orleans and the Dolphins as well. Let us know what you think. Again, the number here is 508-543-7482. Right now we're going to go to the phones, and we're going to welcome in Peter King from Sports Illustrated. Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Not bad.
Great.
Not
thanks,
bad.
Peter.
Thank you
Good.
Very much for joining us. We're talking about some of the things that have surprised us over the first half or the first 7 weeks of the season for the Patriots. We've gone over a few things like Tom Brady's reacclimation into the offense, the Joey Galloway, what we're calling the failed Joey Galloway experiment, the return of Junior Seau. What stands out for you about this Patriots team as maybe the most surprising thing over the first 7 weeks of the regular season?
I guess the most surprising thing is that, it took a while for the Patriots to get going. I think that one of the things that happens in a case like with a team like this, you tend to have high expectations going in. I had very high expectations going in, and they didn't meet them early on. They were, fairly shaky through 4 or 5 weeks. And I think some of that is it's the classic. You never pick up exactly where you left off. But now I think the Earth is probably a little more on its axis every every week. It's a little bit. The last 2 weeks have seemed a little bit more normal.
We're talking about the stretch that the Patriots have coming up after the bye week. Four games in particular. Home games against Miami and the Jets, and then road games against the Colts and the Saints. How much more will we know about this team after that four-week stretch?
Clearly they're going to have a brutal schedule coming up. The good thing is that they got the bye, before then, so they can be as healthy as they can be. I think one of the things that Bill Belichick wants to do with this team, he wants to get some of his playmakers, especially on defense, playing a little better. Now that Brandon Merriweather, sitting with Rodney Harrison every week, he's like a proud father with Brandon Merriweather. He feels so happy for the kid. But I think Patriots have got to find some way to get Adalys Thomas in position to make plays. Maybe he isn't the player they thought he was. That's quite apparent, but I still think he has the ability to be put in a position to make some plays for this team.
Peter, before you came on, I was telling Chris that my biggest surprise so far this season for the Patriots has been the failed experiment with Joey Galloway and making him a part of this offense. I'm at a loss to explain why that was. Do you have any insight as to, maybe why things didn't click with him here? He's been on several different teams in the past and has seemed to be productive for all of them. He comes here, with presumably the best quarterback he's ever played with, and yet he couldn't pick things up.
You know what? I think it has more to do with him not playing well. I mean, didn't you sense early on? I mean, what was he doing dropping the ball like that?
Yeah, I'd never seen that before.
Dropping the ball like Ted Ginn. You know, it's fairly, I thought it was fairly interesting that at least early on, he was a guy who just, it just couldn't hang on to the ball. I mean, it shocked me. And I think that's one of the, reasons. I mean, we saw this week how, the Dolphins have now, you know, benched Ted Ginn. And everybody's looking for deep, dark reasons. There are deep, dark reasons. He's dropping the ball. And that's why I think that the biggest reason why the Patriots did what they did is they couldn't rely on Joey Galloway to catch it.
Peter, we heard a lot around here this week about how the Patriots were one of the favored teams overseas in England. They drew a big crowd over there. They drew big crowds wherever they went. And there seems to be more and more talk about playing more and more games over there. Can you envision a scenario where the Patriots may end up, I'm not talking about an extensive schedule, but maybe a couple of games a year over there?
Well, the NFL is convinced that one of the things that they have to do is to try to get one team to be a home team over there. And I don't know what team that's going to be. The logical one to me, and in essence, when I say a home team, I mean playing one game a year over there so that the people over there start following one American football team. And it doesn't seem logical that that would be the Patriots in any other way other than that they got a big star in Tom Brady. They're always going to be good. But, you know, Patriots aren't having attendance problems, to the best of my knowledge. And I think the NFL would rather put a team over there that they could kind of pick up by the bootstraps and say, hey, you know, we're trying to actually help this team both financially and in terms of fans.
Peter, we've got several teams right now who are either undefeated or have one loss. Had pretty strong performances so far. Which one of those do you think, I don't want to say has the best chance to go undefeated, but is the most, is in the best position to be one of the best teams at the end of the season? In other words, I'm not so convinced that the Broncos, even though they're still going strong right now, are that good a team. Or will be at the end of the season. What's your take on those few handful of teams who are still undefeated or one loss right now?
I think the biggest thing when I would look at it is what's the team that on a given Sunday. First of all, I don't think any of these teams are going undefeated. I think if you look at the Saints schedule, I've got the Saints as the best team right now. I think if you look at the Saints' schedule, the Colts' schedule, and Denver's schedule, I think Denver's going to lose at Baltimore this weekend. But when you look at all these schedules, they got several landmine games. And, you know, the Saints were just behind by 21 on Sunday and had a miracle comeback to win. So,
right.
But I look at the team that I think has the best chance right now to play explosively, consistently on offense, and also has the best chance to play 5, 6, 7 really good defensive games down the stretch is New Orleans. I think that New Orleans is, in essence, I think they're a really good defensive team now, really up from total mediocrity.
And they seem to be playing with confidence. You know, especially coming back from that deficit on the road to Miami, even though Miami's not one of the better teams in the league, but still to be on the road and have to overcome something like that and still put up the enormous number of points that they've been putting up, I think has to feed into their confidence as a team.
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, the one thing about the Saints right now is that, I mean, nobody even realizes this. Everybody thinks it's all Drew Brees all the time. This is the second-rated running game in football right now. People, I doubt you. Maybe 10% of the people in America could name Thomas and Bell as the two running backs in their scheme. You know, obviously, other than Reggie Bush. But I mean, they're playing great in the running game. It's the most unheralded single portion of any team in football right now. So that's one of the reasons why I like them. They don't have to rely on Drew Brees to do everything.
Peter, last question from us. How's Pedro going to do tonight against the Yankees?
I hope he does great. I don't know. You know, he's one of those guys who is at the point in his life, point in his career, where if he's got to make some deal with the devil to get this win tonight, he'll do it. I mean, that's how important this game is to him, especially with, I think, his disdain for New York, his disdain for the media, and, you know, his long-term rivalry with the Yankees. I think this is one of the biggest five starts of Pedro's career tonight.
Peter, thank you very much for your time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. See ya.
Take care. Peter.
Peter King here on Patriots Playbook. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Now look at that. I pressed the button and I'm talking. That's fantastic. I wanted to hop back in. I was all excited to hop back in. You know,
get long enough to learn it.
It is, you know. Come on.
We need a sign that says push button, red light equals on.
Push button now. Just hold up a big sign like you were doing before.
I think Fred Kirsch wrote that book, didn't he, Eric?
He wrote a book about a lot of things.
We were just talking a little bit off the air about Twittering and Twitter feeds, and it's a great way to get information out to the people. While I'm on the air here, I'm going to plug my own Twitter account, my own Twitter feed, which I promoted, by the way. I said I'm going to be on Patriots Playbook. Thank you very much. It's twitter.com/capeleaguer, CAPELEAGUER. That's twitter.com/capeleaguer. Follow me for all sorts of Patriots-related updates and other assorted information along the way.
And for those who don't know, why is Cape Leaguer the name of your Twitter account?
I am a fan of the Cape Cod Baseball League. I wrote a book about the history of the Cape Cod Baseball League, and I've been following it for years and years and years. Thank you very much once again. Just any excuse to blow the horn.
That was your first book?
That was the first book, exactly. I wrote a second book.
Get ready.
Called The Blueprint about the history of the Patriots. Thank you. That must be some sort of record. Three of those in what? In literally
in 30 seconds.
Probably in 30 seconds.
And we have Paul Perillo on 3 days a week.
That's true.
We were talking about some of the surprises over the first half of the Patriots season, some of the things that stood out for us, some of the things that were amazing, impressive, good, bad, or otherwise. If you have your take, send it along to us at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. The phone number here, get in touch with us that way as well, is 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. One of the things that really stood out for me was, and it wasn't probably in retrospect, it shouldn't have been all that much of a surprise, was the return of Junior Seau, the return of the 40-year-old linebacker.
You were surprised?
I think at the beginning I thought, well, you know, he can't come back. He's 40 years old. There's no way he can do it. There's no way that he can pull his body off a surfboard, and 2 days later he's going to be on the, you know, he's going to be on the practice field for the Patriots. But he's done it in the past.
He's done it for the last few years.
In retrospect, now it's, you sit here and you go, well, you know, it's not that much of a surprise. And he played pretty well.
Yeah.
When he's been asked to play the first two weeks of the season,
he looks like he never left.
It does, exactly. One of the things that he's allowed the Patriots to do, I think, is play a little bit more 3-4 on defense. Now that they have a little bit
more than
they
had been in the first few weeks.
Exactly. Right. Do you think over the first 5 weeks or so, the reason they played as much 4-3 as they did was because a game planning approach, or was it because just a simple numbers and they had to play to their strengths, and instead of running, you know, Eric Alexander out there in the middle, you could play Junior Seau?
Well,
play a little 3-4.
Yeah, game plan obviously had something to do with it, but I think more so it was because of just the sheer lack of depth at the position. They couldn't really afford to put four linebackers out there, because if one of them went down, then they were sort of in a jam. So I think they kind of they developed their game plan around their roster, and their roster wasn't very deep at linebacker, so I think that's why. And they were a little bit better off at defensive line, so I think they figured, well, let's adjust to what the conditions are at the moment. Let's play 4-3. Now they have a little bit more of an even situation between the linebackers and the defensive line, and that allows them to, from one down to the next, go from 4-3 to 3-4 and back again, depending on what they want to do against a certain down and distance or an opponent and their personnel packages or whatever. So it's definitely a more versatile defense than it was maybe at the beginning of the season. And say that was one of the reasons why that is. I think the other reason is that their defensive backfield is starting to it's starting to become a cohesive unit, whereas before it was several individual components who by themselves were decent but hadn't really figured out how to play as a whole yet. And I think we're starting to see some of the benefits of that, just that natural cohesion that's happening.
I think at the start of the season, that secondary was a bit of an unknown quantity. Mm-hmm. They had three of the four guys who started last season for them, guys like Delth O'Neill and Ellis Hobbs, Rodney Harrison, those guys have all gone, either released, retired, or traded. And I think it was a bit of an unknown quantity at the start of the season, because you had a bunch of guys there who, A, didn't have a whole lot of time playing together, and B, didn't have a whole lot of time within the Belichick system. Mm-hmm. They've certainly appeared to come around. Brandon McGowan, for me, has been a revelation. Nothing short of a revelation. We talked a little bit before about Brandon Merriweather stepping his game up and continuing to evolve and continuing to get better and better and better. I also think that Lee Bodden has played fairly well. I don't want to give him, I don't want to say he's gotten a big thumbs up, but he's played better than, let's say, played a little bit better than to be expected. One of the things that also stands out to me,
he's an upgrade over Hobbs at that spot.
He is, exactly. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. He's an upgrade over Hobbs at that spot. He's also a little bit of a different cornerback than the Patriots have had. He's a little bit bigger. He's a little bit more physical.
Yep.
The Patriots really have not had a big, tough, physical corner. They've had smaller guys. They've had guys, again, like Hobbs, Asante Samuel, Delph O'Neal was one of those guys. Just guys who are a little bit smaller. Guys who can't push another receiver around.
Yeah, and Chris, aside from Sean Springs, that's really who they have at that position, and Bodden. Mm-hmm. But Springs hasn't really played all that much. Bodden has really been the one guy who's, you know, 6 feet, 200 pounds, can match up with some of the bigger receivers and be physical with them. Jonathan Wilhite, he's listed as 5'11". He's not even close to that.
No.
Darius Butler, Terrence Wheatley, they're all basically my size.
Smaller guys, exactly.
You know, 5'8 to 5'9, 175, 180 pounds. And that's fine. You can get away with that. But, you know, we expected Springs and Bodden to be the two guys who kind of were going to be the two starters at either corner. Bodden has held up his end, but Springs, I think because of injury, hasn't really been able to do that.
He's been dinged up a little bit.
Yeah, on and off throughout training camp and into this regular season. So Jonathan Wilhite, who was a fourth-round pick last year, has really stepped up his game and become a legitimate starting left cornerback for this team.
Bill talked a little bit about it during the press conference today, and it seems to be one of those things that we tend to overlook a little bit, but the continuity level, the continuity factor that comes with kind of putting together a group of cornerbacks as they did in the offseason tends to get overlooked a little bit. The fact that you need a little time on the field, whenever you're playing, whatever position you're playing, when you can know, I always go back to the idea of the offensive line, that you need to know that guy next to you can get the job done. You know, you need to know that guy knows his assignment, knows it perfectly, so you don't have to try and do his assignment, try and do what he's doing for him. What do you think in that regard? How do you think the Patriots cornerbacks, the Patriots secondary overall, has done this year?
Better than expected, actually, given how the sheer number of changes that took place at that spot over the past few months and into the offseason. The biggest surprise there for me is the regression of James Sanders. He's gone from being a key cog in that unit as a starter to now in the last couple of weeks, he's been the fourth safety out there. You have Merriweather, McGowan, who pretty much started. Chung has come in as the nickel guy, and Sanders has rotated in here and there, but he's getting less and less of a role each week, and that's kind of surprising given all that we heard this offseason about the relationship he and Belichick have, and that's being part of the reason why he decided to re-sign here, and Belichick looking to him to be a leader. I mean, you can still be a leader and not be, you know, on the field.
Dean Pease has called him the old man of the secondary.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But I'm surprised that, you know, each year in his first 5 years, we saw him making more and more progress, and now all of a sudden he is that de facto leader now, and he's taking less and less of a prominent role as far as being out on the field. That has surprised me a little bit, but you can't really argue with the decision to do that because McGowan has clearly been an excellent surprise addition. Merriweather has made a few big plays here and there. I still think he's yet to reach that level where we can put him in the elite category because of one major problem, Chris, and that is his tackling ability.
Yep.
He has none.
And that's something that we've talked about before. That's true.
Yeah, and he's sort of admitted that of late, too, that he really needs to work on that more. If he gets that down, if he learns that the two arms together wrapped around the legs of an opponent brings that person to a stop, he's going to be a great safety.
As opposed to doing just
what he does now, which is launch himself and throw a shoulder into a guy, and that doesn't cause a tackle.
Yeah.
Because guys can either jump over it or bounce off it. You need to wrap up, and even if you can't bring a guy down who's maybe twice your size, that causes him to slow down, and you bring other people in to make the tackle and maybe force a fumble or whatever. Once he can do that, and I think he has the ability to do it, he just needs to work on it, be conscious of it and work on it, like he did with his propensity to drop interceptions as a rookie. He worked on that consciously in the offseason, and now he's making plays as a result. And this week he talked about his mistakes in tackling lately. So I think he's starting to come around to realizing that's the one area of his game that he needs to work on. Once he does that, I think he'll become one of the better safeties in the league.
Boy, he had some bad mitts as a rookie. Didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He had some bad hands as a rookie.
Right.
He's in that area of his game. I mean, that's one thing that really has stood out for me. His playmaking ability, his ability to pick off those passes. We saw it last week against Tampa Bay. Of course, they threw two passes literally almost right to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really couldn't have missed. But he's really improved in that level. You are listening to Patriots Playbook. right here on Patriots.com. My name is Christopher Price, sitting in for John Rook, joined here in studio by Eric Scalavino, Patriots.com and Patriots Football Weekly. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. We're talking about kind of looking back at the Patriots over the first 7 weeks of the season, the fact that they're 5-2, things that have really kind of stood out for us more than anything. We're also looking forward at what the Patriots can expect, and we've gone over this now a couple of times, the crucial, really crucial stretch of game that the Patriots have coming up. Over the next five games, they play the Dolphins twice, and we all know that the Dolphins are known for their ability to run the Wildcat offense. And this really has stood out for us. We're kind of taking a look at stuff around the web, and there was a piece on Pro Football Talk today talking about the Wildcat and talking about the success that the Saints had in stopping the Wildcat offense. When the Wildcat formation is only one part of the attack success, the Dolphins were averaging 7.1 yards per play on 47 Wildcat snaps before week 7. That's 7.1 yards a play on 47 Wildcat snaps. Then they faced the Saints, writes Pro Football Talk. New Orleans stuffed the formation to the tune of 27 yards on 14 plays.
So it's about 2 yards
a
carry.
And that's a dramatic decrease from the 7.1 yards that they were getting a little bit earlier. The New Orleans Times-Picayune says the Saints did it by being the aggressors. Defensive coordinator Greg Williams blitzed cornerbacks Jabari Greer and Tracy Porter every time Ronnie Brown went into the shotgun. Safety Roman Harper also attacked often. The result was 4 tackles for loss and Miami's best gain in the formation, coming with 8 yards. So in a couple of weeks, and we saw it here last year for the first time, when the Dolphins ran the Wildcat, if I remember correctly, if we see it in a couple of weeks, I'm assuming, now, and I'm trying to think back to that game down in Miami, the second time when the Patriots were able to really stop the Wildcat, they were, if I remember correctly, they stacked the line an awful lot. They didn't give a whole lot of space up there. Are we going to see some blitzing cornerbacks? Are we going to see some blitzing defensive backs to try and put a little heat on Ronnie Brown?
Well, we saw a lot of blitzing cornerbacks and some blitzing safeties against Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. That was a huge part of that game plan. They didn't necessarily get to Josh Johnson all that much, but the pressure was there. The presence of seeing the safeties blitz you was there, and they had to force their other players, tight ends and running backs, to pick up those blitzes. I'd be a little careful about doing that against Miami because now that somebody has done it that way and mm-hmm. stopped them, there's going to be 2 games, 2 weeks before the Patriots play them again. They're obviously going to make some adjustments.
And they have the Jets next week.
They have the Jets this coming week, and then the Patriots the following week. One thing, if I were the Dolphins, I would expect them to do would be to start throwing the ball more out of that mm-hmm. formation. They pretty much, it sounds like they've been running with Brown in the shotgun. Mm-hmm. They drafted Pat White for a reason. So you put him and Brown in the backfield and suddenly you start blitzing corners. That means wide receivers aren't being covered.
And you have the option to throw the ball more likely with White as opposed to Ronnie Brown.
Right. And either one of them can run. And we've seen that Brown has, you know, a decent enough arm to throw it when he has to. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to try to beat them that way, I would expect Miami to counter by throwing the ball more out of that formation. So I think you kind of have to, just be careful how much stock you put into what New Orleans did, because that was obviously a one-time game plan. People hadn't done that to them before. There'll be some changes in the next 2 weeks.
It's going to be interesting to see, especially with the Jets-Dolphins game coming up, as you mentioned, that they're going to tweak it a little bit. I have to imagine that they're going to tweak things going forward. And again, Pro Football Talk notes the fact that any way you can be sure that Rex Ryan and Bill Belichick, Miami's next two opposing coaches, will take a hard look at what the Saints accomplished. Both men have flexible defenses to work with, and the Dolphins will need to show they can adjust. And that's your point. Your point is very well taken. Another thing that jumped out at us today on Pro Football Talk is a report from Joel Glazer, who denied rumors of a financial problems and a sale of the Buccaneers. I'll just read this to you really quickly. Glazer initially opted not to respond to a rumor that the family has suffered significant financial losses as a result of the Bertie Madoff investment scam.
Oh.
And the rumors that, as a result of their losses, their Tampa Bay Buccaneers could be for sale.
Wow.
But now Buccaneers co-chair Joel Glazer, one of the sons of owner Malcolm Glazer, has issued through the team an unequivocal denial of such rumors. The report today by WDAE's Dan Saleo, and I don't know if I'm getting that name right, about our family and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is 100% false. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are not, nor have they ever been, for sale. In addition, our family or any of our related companies have never invested money, one penny, with Bernie Madoff. The report is baseless, irresponsible, and slanderous. This type of report will be dealt with in the appropriate manner. So wow. It sounds like the Glazers
sounds like
are
a
not
lawsuit.
Suing. Exactly. There may be a lawsuit in the future there with when it comes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and, what is it, WDAE down there in South Florida. My name is Chris Price. You are listening to Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com. Want to get in touch with us? You can reach with us by giving us an email at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. Now, we talked about the next 4 or 5 weeks coming up for the Patriots, but they have a stretch at the end of the season as well. If you look at they have 9 games left. And then after that second Miami game, things start to change a little bit. Things start to kind of ramp back down, if you will. They go to, and again, we've run over this early, the middle part of the schedule, really, Miami, Indy, the Jets, New Orleans, and Miami. And that takes us up to December 13th. 4 games left, 2 home games, 2 road games. You have Carolina at home. You have Buffalo on the road. You have Jacksonville at home. And you have Houston on the road. So if you get to that stretch, let's say that they're, I don't know, let's and again, we're looking forward here. But let's say that they get to that point, they're 9-3, 8-4.
Mm-hmm.
Is it reasonable to think that there might be a bit of a letdown, that there might be a trap game involved in there somewhere? We've seen it a couple of times from this Patriots team over the last few years. There was a time where they went down to Miami a few years ago on a Monday night game. I think it was in 2006.
The orange jersey game.
Exactly, the orange jersey game. Is there a concern at all that stretch in there, Carolina, Buffalo, Jacksonville, and Houston, that one of those games would be a trap game for this
team? I don't think this team ever gets caught in trap games. I just think there are some games like that one you mentioned where it's hard to win every week in this league.
Yep.
And the difference between bad and good teams in most cases is not very much. So given the way this team prepares and this coaching staff prepares this team, I don't really buy into the fact that they take any team for granted. That said, I think what you're going to see in that first 5 weeks after the bye is they're going to win one of those games that most people think they're going to lose, the 3-night road games, Indy, New Orleans, and Miami. Most people tend to think that those are going to be the toughest games.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll win at least one of those games that people think they're going to lose. And in the final month, they might lose one of the games that everybody thinks they're going to win. The one I think has the most potential is the Houston game, simply because it's the last game of the year. Houston might be fighting for something. New England might not be. And it wouldn't be so much of a trap as, you know, they might be setting themselves up for what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm looking at, the more I look at the schedule, the more I think that they're going to be 6-3 in the final 9 games. Mm-hmm. I can't really.
And that would make sense. As you said, that sets them up to be, what is it,
11-5? Right.
And that would be, you would probably get that first week off. You would have to host a wild card game.
Now, assuming that teams like the Broncos and Indy don't go into dramatic slides, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's New England and Pittsburgh again vying for two spots. I don't see that happening to Indianapolis as far as going into a dramatic slide. I think the potential exists more for Denver to do that, and I think I agree with what Peter King said earlier. I think it starts this week in Baltimore. I think they're going to lose that game. So if New England is in 3 or 4 loss range around mid-December, I think they could legitimately be fighting for one of the 2 spots for a bye. So, if that's the case, then I think they would run the table at that point, because they would clearly be fighting. For, you know, if Indy and Denver only have 1 loss at that point, and it might be out of reach, you know,
it's a situational thing.
It's
and again, we've seen this here a couple of times. When I think the last time was when it was the dropkick game where they came in and they didn't necessarily have to win. Mm-hmm. And so we saw a second half with a lot of backup guys and special teamers and kind of filling those roles. If you get into a situation in that last Houston game where you're not playing for anything and you know, you're pretty much locked into where you're going to be locked into, maybe you see a second half of Brian Hoyer and Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and
maybe
the rest of them.
But something tells me that that game is going to have significance for one or both teams, and I think that that's going to be that's going to be an important game. It might have a lot to do with seeding. I don't know. I just have that weird feeling when that schedule came out in April. That was my first thought, and you know, the way Houston's playing now, I think they're playing more consistently than they were in the first couple of games of the season, and they could still be hanging around at the end there, trying to fight for a playoff spot.
We talked a little bit about the defense, and particularly the secondary, about how it was really kind of started the year as an unknown quantity and has kind of really started to come together very nicely as of late, particularly the play of Brandon McGowan and Brandon Merriweather. Let's talk a little bit about, we're going to lose you here in a few minutes, but let's talk a little bit about, before you go, about the offense and the offensive side of the ball with this team. And I want to focus specifically, we talked a little bit about the wide receiver position with Joey Galloway, but let's focus more on the running back situation at this point, and specifically Lawrence Maroney. He had a very good game against Tennessee, 123 yards, and then kind of followed that up with a so-so game. They really didn't ask him to do a whole lot last week against Tampa Bay because, and they talked a little bit about this, Bill talked a little bit about this, how Tampa Bay kind of over-pursues teams and, mm-hmm. and is very aggressive to the football. And so what they wanted to do was kind of use that against them and maybe run some screens and run some reverses. We saw a few reverses and not have that traditional between the tackles running game that we've seen in years past. What do you see? What do you make of Lawrence Maroney at this stage of the season? And maybe you don't want a bigger picture at this stage of his career.
Well, he's still an enigma, I'm afraid to say. You know, there are games like that Tennessee one where he breaks off a long run for a touchdown, and he seems to have the confidence in himself and the momentum, and then, you know, a game like the following week against Tampa Bay, again, it might not have been the game plan, but when he gets the handoff, he's dancing around a little bit too much. And it just, I don't know if he's ever going to be the consistent go-to back that they thought they had when they drafted him.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is Lawrence Maroney, a.k.a. Kool-Aid, a.k.a. Right. L. Dot, a.k.a. L. Train.
Yep.
Step your game up, player.
Yeah, well, I think that's a pep talk that he needs to have with himself. It's just after all these years now, I don't know. I think we have what we're going to have with Lawrence Maroney, and not that he's a bad player. It's just he's not as consistent nearly as consistent as we had hoped he was going to be. And he was drafted to be the number one back. Mm-hmm. You don't pick a guy in the first round to be a complimentary guy in a running back by committee approach. I think it'll be, if they can make it through this stretch through the next 2 weeks here and possibly get Sammy Morris back. Hopefully Fred Taylor comes back by December or at least by the playoffs. You know, Maroney's going to have to split carries with Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, I think, because the more you see of Green Ellis, the more you like, mm-hmm. I think has been the consensus.
That's true.
And the more you see of Maroney, the more frustrated you get.
Yeah.
He has a great opportunity now. The two guys that were getting reps ahead of him are injured, and it's his game. It's his time to prove, you know, whether or not he can step up and carry the load or if he's going to have to share it again. But again, Chris, it's a question mark.
Yeah.
I wish he would have done something by now to make us more confident in what he can do, but he just hasn't shown it yet.
The biggest game for me where they're going to need that, the full complement of their running backs. You don't know if Fred Taylor is going to be back, but you want to have as many running backs back there. You want to have as many different options in the running game as possible is that New Orleans game, where I think the best way maybe to beat the Saints is to keep that offense off the field.
Yeah, same with Indy.
And chew up some clock. Exactly. So the same with Indy is to chew up a lot of clock, to control the pace of the game, control the offense.
Yeah.
We don't think we're going to see, and correct me if I'm wrong, but at least I don't think that we're going to see Fred Taylor back before then.
Probably not.
You might see Sammy Morris back. But I think a lot of it, and not a lot of it, but some of it, a good chunk of it, is going to fall on Lawrence Maroney's shoulders.
Yeah,
those two games.
I agree. I think that would be a way to game plan against those two teams is just hold the ball and run the clock down and let them have as few opportunities as possible to put those points up on the board that they've been putting up against other teams. They're going to need the full complement of Maroney and Green Ellis and whoever else is healthy at that point to do it. Kevin Faulk may have to even get some carries. He's done it before. It's not the biggest guy in the world, but he gets it done when he has to. Mm-hmm. So, I think you're right. Those two games are going to be crucial for those players in particular and this team in general as to what they have.
I had a guy email me this week, and he wanted to know if the Patriots could use Lawrence Maroney in a similar situation as Reggie Bush. Hear me out here. When I say that he was thinking that, you know, you could take him and you could use him in space. He is at his best when he is operating in space, when he's operating away from the ball, when mm-hmm. he can show that breakaway speed. Mm-hmm. And he just hasn't had a chance to use it. And I said, you look at a team and you look at this team as presently constituted, as put together, and Kevin Faulk's more in that role. Kevin Faulk is more that pass catching back, that option out of the backfield, that guy who can kind of give you a little bit of a different look. Is there anything to the idea, and I'm not agreeing here, but I just wanted to get your take on it, is there anything to the idea of maybe flexing Lawrence Maroney out a little bit more, maybe playing him in the slot, maybe sure. playing him as a wide receiver, again, to get him in space?
Sure, why not? I mean, I think he's proven he has pretty decent hands. He's gotten better over the years anyway. And he, you know, when he does have the ball in space, he is at his best. He has made plays when he's been out there in the open. That might be an option. I mean, he's certainly quicker than Faulk is at this point in his career. I would have no objection to giving him a shot of doing that.
Before we let you go here, we talked a little bit about it, and I want to get your take on how this team shapes up the rest of the season. You see them, it sounds like you see them as a 12-4, 11-5 team. You know, you get
worst case 11-5,
and you get that first week off. You host a wild card game, and you kind of go from there. Is that a fair assessment as to where you see this team going?
I think they certainly are capable of getting one of the two bye weeks in the first week of the playoffs. I think it's more likely they'll go 11-5 and have to play on wild card weekend. I hate to say it, but I think at this point, just from what I've seen now. They've made some good progress and some surprising progress in areas that I wasn't really expecting. So maybe in the next half of the season, they'll continue to make that progress, and they'll end up being one of the best teams on both sides of the ball. I'd like to think so. I'm being a little cautiously optimistic about it, and just I'd rather err on the side of set my expectations low and be surprised, which is kind of how I went into the season, and I'm been pleasantly surprised in a few areas. So, it remains to be seen, but I'm being cautiously optimistic. John asked me yesterday if I was buying or selling the stock. I'm holding right now.
Sounds good. Do you do anything fun for the bye week?
Expecting a lot of trick-or-treaters to come by the house.
Nice.
So I'll be doing that. I probably have a party or two that I'll have to attend. But
sounds good.
Hopefully trying to get rid of this jet lag because I need a nap.
You're struggling a little bit.
I'm struggling a little bit to stay awake. I've had weird sleep schedules since we've gotten back and been up till midnight and sleeping at weird hours. So trying to get back to the routine of being on the East Coast and hopefully next week. Oh, stop.
Well, thanks for hanging around, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man.
I value your insight.
Thanks.
And it's always good. We spend a lot of time talking off the air mm-hmm. at practice and in the locker room. It's always good to kind of, you know, make the transition on air. So thanks for sticking around.
No problem, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good. We're going to take a real quick break. We are going to come back here on Patriots Playbook with Russell Baxter from ESPN. He is up right after the break. My name is Chris Price. Stay tuned.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest plastic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
I like this. There we go. See, I pressed it down the first time and it didn't work. I did. I pressed the button. I'm getting better at this stuff. I'm getting better. I feel more comfortable. I'm in here. Usually there's, you know, usually there's a bunch of other guys in, not in here, but in the, across the street before the game when we do the WEI NFL Sunday. I'm with Dale and Michael and Christian and the rest of those guys. This is me. I'm the traffic cop now. This is fantastic, man. I'm loving this. I'm loving this. My name is Christopher Price. You are listening to Patriots Playbook right here at Patriots.com. If you want to give us an email, get in contact with us at webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. We will get to your calls momentarily. But right now, we have on the line with us Russell Baxter from ESPN.
Baxter!
Chris, how are you?
He just accidentally unplugged his headphones.
There we go. Now I'm back. See, again, I'm there we go. We're all set. Russell, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here, Breaker 19. I mean, I can take a hint, so.
I appreciate that, man. Thanks. Thank you very much. How you been?
I'm good. How are you doing? We're just watching this thing fly by, huh?
This is fantastic, man. This is a great season. It's been a fantastic season. It's been a very exciting season here in New England. We were just talking a little bit before about, you know, we're not really sure where this team is. And I want to start out talking with you about maybe some of the things, at least from a statistical perspective, that have jumped out for you over the first 7 weeks of the regular season for this New England Patriots team.
Well, you know, it was funny. In the beginning of the year, you know, New England had a habit of playing teams that hadn't lost. The last two games they played, they had played two teams that haven't won. So, you know, I think while people were semi-pushing the panic button and watching Tom Brady's numbers not be awe-inspiring in the early going, I think sometimes you overreact to the fact that he's thrown 9 touchdown passes and two interceptions in the last two games against Tennessee and Tampa Bay. So I think you just have to look at how they're progressing. My problem with New England, once we get to like the divisional games and so on, is watching how their defense develops. I mean, this is a younger defense. They've sorted out a lot of different guys. I mean, to me, the offense, as long as Tom Brady is healthy and they have a lot of their components there and they keep him protected, offense doesn't figure to be a problem in New England. But defensively, they've made a lot of changes. I mean, obviously, they brought Junior Seau back for a reason. Hmm. And I think, you know, I think the best or worst is yet to come for the Patriots. Remember, Tom Brady's coming back from knee surgery from a year ago. There's a lot of factors that go in here. And here's what we've learned about this league, Chris, is, you know, whether you want to think it or not, you know, depending on how you're playing in the playoffs is how you can succeed. You know, we saw the Arizona Cardinals last year stumble down the stretch, and they got blasted by 40 points at Foxborough. Hmm. And suddenly you're in the Super Bowl and leading the Steelers with 2 minutes left. You know, the NFL playoffs has really become like the NCAA tournament. I always kid that my preseason Super Bowl pick 2 years ago was Dallas versus George Mason. but think about it. It's the team that's hot at the right time. I mean, think about just the NFC alone. We've seen a 9-7 and a 10-6 team in the Super Bowl the last 2 years. And the 10-6 team won the Super Bowl. The 9-7 team was up late in the game. So in an era where there's not really dominant teams, I think there are consistent franchises, but not necessarily dominant teams. I mean, to me, the Patriots are the best team of this decade for what they have achieved. But it's also an era in the National Football League where the faces on the team change a lot. Okay, it's not like your '60s Packers and your '70s Steelers, and to a degree, the 90s Cowboys. I don't really look at the 80s 49ers that way because their Super Bowls were so spread out. They won the four in the 9 years, and they only had five players that were on all four of those teams. But keeping those guys together is very, very hard. And, you know, the teams that won those Super Bowls in 01 and 03 and 04 for New England, you know, a lot of the components weren't there in 07, and certainly a lot of the components aren't there now.
We'll take a look around the league in a minute, but I want to ask one more Patriots-related question. There's a school of thought up here when it comes to Tom Brady and his knee injury, that Tom Brady will follow the same path that Peyton Manning did when he had his knee surgery. Now, Manning's knee surgery was far less invasive, obviously, and it happened a year ago. Manning got off to a bad start, rounded into form. The Colts won their last 9 games down the stretch. In this year, he is, I don't want to say the consensus MVP, but he's right up there probably in the top 3 in the voting. Is there any reason to think that Tom Brady would not follow that same path that Peyton Manning did?
Well, the thing to keep in mind about Peyton Manning, too, is it wasn't just the fact that he missed the preseason last year. The interior of his offensive line was in shambles. If you remember, you know, the guards in the center was a real mess. You know, to me, Tom Brady still has the luxury of a very, very good offensive line. So I think as long as he remains healthy, he's certainly a viable MVP candidate. But I think as much as Peyton got off to the slow start last year because of his not playing in the preseason and his knee injury, was as much of the fact that the guys in front of him, and remember, this is a guy who just doesn't get sacked a lot. And it's a combination of his lineman understanding what he's doing and his release and so on. But when you have the interior, listen, the Jacksonville Jaguars didn't really recover from the same thing last year, where they had problems with the guard and the center and so on. I don't care how good you are. I mean, you can be the best quarterback in the league, best of all time. If you're not protected, and we saw that, you know, 2 years ago, not to bring up unpleasant memories, but 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, with New England and the Giants, you know, in that game, just to flash back for a second, I think people forget, and, you know, agree with me if you want, Chris, when Stephen Neal got hurt in that game.
That was huge.
I don't think people realize the continuity of an offensive line is the most important thing. You can have five what you would consider average or just above average guys, but they all work together like the Giants line has done for about 3 years now. Yep. That's how you become good on the offensive line.
Russell, I always go back. I don't mean to jump in, but I always go back to the idea of the continuity and consistency is maybe the most important thing on an offensive line. I agree.
There's no doubt about it. It's one of those things I track every year and watching. And it, you know, well, you'll see. Well, the guy started 16 games, yeah, but he started 10 at left tackle and he started 6 at right tackle. It's not the same thing. You know, you look at teams who start all five guys in all 16 games at the same five spots, are those teams are always very, very highly successful. And the Giants, like I said, have been doing that for a couple of years. Now they've got a little streak going with that. So, again, you don't need five Anthony Munozes and John Hannas and you know, some of the other greats in order to have a great offensive line. You need these guys just to be all on the same page.
Russell, let's take a real quick look around the National Football League. Obviously, there's no action here in Foxborough this week, but there is a key division game in Giants Stadium between the Dolphins and the Jets. Now, we were talking a little bit about this Pro Football Talk story, actually taken from the New Orleans Times-Picayune, talking about how the Saints were able to stop the Wildcat by blitzing cornerbacks Jabari Greer and Tracy Porter. They stuffed the formation to the tune of 27 yards on 14 plays. Can the Jets present the same kind of problems for Miami and their Wildcat?
Well, you know what was so fun? Oh, by the way, I'm referring to this game as the hot dog versus the Wildcat, just so you know.
Take that, Mark Sanchez.
Yeah. Well, listen, at least he didn't put ketchup on his hot dog. So, I mean, that would have been a cardinal sin in some people's eyes. But, hey, the guy was hungry. What are you going to do? In any case, the thing that was so surprising, Chris, about when these teams played on that Monday night 3 weeks ago, and the Dolphins had so much – I mean, the Jets had so many problems stopping the Wildcat offense, which, you know, it's in its second year now, really kind of – it's really kind of blossoming. But if you remember the year before, Rex Ryan, who was the defensive coordinator from the Ravens, Baltimore not only beat the Dolphins once in the regular season, but they beat them in the playoffs as well, both of those games in Miami. It was almost like they weren't ready for what happened to them this time. And a lot of that, just so you know, is – the misconception that the Wildcat offense is trickery. It's really a power-based offense. You can't run the Wildcat with just deception. You've got to have really good offensive linemen who know what they're doing, and that's why the Dolphins in the offseason upgraded themselves at guard, upgraded themselves at center. I mean, you know, there's no mistake about that. Now, that being saying, I know you just threw out the Wildcat numbers with the Saints, but, you know, you also looked at when the Dolphins didn't run the Wildcat per se. They pitched out to Ricky Williams, and he ran about 70 yards for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. You know, that stable of backs that Miami has is pretty potent. The key here is, you know, you don't want to say it's Mark Sanchez, but in the way it is, because when he hasn't given up the football, the Jets have been very, very successful. To me, Miami's still got to be a little shell-shocked about what happened to them. And simply put, if the Jets are going to stay in the divisional race, the first thing you can't do is get swept. And they've already lost to Miami once, so I think that the Jets need to hold serve here.
Mm-hmm. The other AFC East game this week is between Houston and Buffalo at Ralph Wilson Stadium up there in upstate New York. Is the Buffalo offense any better than what we've seen over the last couple of weeks? Is there any reason for optimism up there?
No, but as long as opposing quarterbacks keep throwing the ball to the Bills' defensive back, notably rookie Jarius Byrd, who has five interceptions this year, second in the league, they'll do okay. I mean, their offense was miserable last week at Carolina, and they got outgained more than 2-1, and yet still managed to win the game. They actually managed to win two games in a row, so just when their season looked lost, they've kind of put things together. But I'll tell you one thing, they are facing a whole different beast when it comes to the explosiveness of the Houston Texans. And listen, I know they had a big lead last week against San Francisco and squandered it. Well, they never, in essence, squandered the lead, but almost squandered the game. But that was big because it finally got the Texans over 500. And listen, that's a team that, like I said, has a lot of offensive talent. They do have suspect defense, but their defense has played incredibly well against their run the last four games. Here's a number for you, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
The first three games of the season, the Houston Texans gave up at least 185 yards rushing in each of those three games.
Wow.
In the last four games, no team has got 60 on them. And you want to say that's a product of them scoring, people trying to play catch-up, say what you will. Listen, Matt Schaub is having a banner year. He's staying healthy. Andre Johnson, who got a little banged up last week, so we'll see about him. Steve Slayton, running and catching. And, you know, a guy who made the Pro Bowl last year, tight end Owen Daniels,
mm-hmm.
is really becoming a big downfield threat for them. And they pose a lot of problems for a lot of different defenses.
Two good games that stand out for me before we get to the real headliner of the week. The Giants at Philadelphia and the Falcons at New Orleans. What stands out for you, particularly statistically, about those two games?
Well, it's the Giants' ability to avoid mistakes. Last two games, the Giants turned over the ball six times, and they've given up five sacks. Now, those aren't, you know, like shattering numbers, okay? But if you consider how error-free they played in the first three games, five turnovers in five games, they only gave up three sacks in their first five games. So a little crack in the armor. And to me, it's always interesting to see how teams respond after their first loss. And the Giants have responded with another loss. So much made about Arizona coming east all last year. Well, Arizona came in. I thought they were more physical than the Giants were last week. Philadelphia can't say enough about DeSean Jackson, but I think it looks like, and then, you know, be a game time decision, the health of Brian Westbrook is a big factor in here because he's had some lights out games against the Giants. His ability to get matched up on the linebackers presents a lot of problems for them. The Eagles were, even though they won Monday night, I didn't think they were overly crisp. And I think the Giants have more desperation here, so I'm kind of leaning toward them. As far as the Saints, everybody talks about all the things of Drew Brees, and there are different things, Chris, but they've now won six games, and they've won them all different ways. They've done it without a lot of offense. They've done it without a lot of defense. They've done it coming from 21 points down. Darren Sharper's having a renaissance year. You know, he's already turned with three interceptions for touchdowns this year. The NFL record for season, by the way, is four, and he's one away from the career record, tying Rod Woodson's record if he gets another one. He has 11 so far in his career. But the thing about New Orleans is 18 takeaways in six games. They had 22 all of last year. And now they're playing a Falcons team who they split with last year. But here's something to keep in mind. Something's gonna have to end here. You know, since Mike Smith took over last year, Falcons have been very sound, fundamental team. One thing they haven't done is lost two games in a row. They did lose to Dallas last week, so it'll be interesting if they can go into New Orleans and beat them on Monday night.
What is New Orleans doing differently this year than maybe what they were doing in years past, specifically defensively?
Well, I think they're a lot more aggressive. I think they're attacking more, and I think, you know, we talk about all the – remember, there were about 22 different defensive coordinator changes around this league, so you needed a program to keep track with it. But kind of a notable defensive coordinator name, I think he kind of got lost in the wash because of, you know, not being overly successful head coach in Buffalo and mixed reviews in Washington. That's Greg Williams, who's always been known as one of the better defensive coordinators in the league. He's down in New Orleans now, and they just have a different modus operandi, if I can do a little French there. And they look like a confident team on defense now, instead of just kind of sit back. Did they have problems last week with the offense? Yes, but they did a better job of, against in the second half. They wound up returning two interceptions for touchdowns. They're aggressive. They're opportunistic. And when you have the ability to put points on the board like the Saints, who, by the way, have scored 45-plus in four of their first six games.
That's amazing.
No team in NFL history has ever done that in terms of their first six games. There's a lot of confidence brewing down in New Orleans this year, and it'll be interesting to see just how far Drew Brees and company can go.
Can we make comparisons? I know we're 7 weeks in, but can we make comparisons to some of the great offenses of years past, in particular the team that we saw here in New England back in 2007? These numbers, I looked at the numbers this week, and they're really striking in their similarity between what the Patriots are doing in 2007 and what the Saints are doing this year.
To me, I look at the fact that the Saints have certainly, right off the top of my head, I know the Saints defense has scored five touchdowns, and I might be missing one, mm-hmm. Okay? So, I mean, Sharper's run back three, Tracy Porter last week, a fumble against Mark Sanchez and so on. Offensively, the thing that will always stand about the Patriots to me is that Tom Brady spent the entire year not missing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he threw 50 touchdowns and eight interceptions. You know, Drew Brees alone threw three picks last week. So I think the Saints have other ways that they put points on the board, not that the New England teams didn't score on defense. But offensively, even though they are scoring, I just remember that New England offense in a totally different illuminating light.
Well, let's get to the big one this week, Miami and Green Bay. What did we learn from the first time these two teams met? And in your estimation, is Brett Favre ready to go back to Lambeau Field?
What we learned is a hell of a lot of people watched that game on ESPN that night because it turned out to be the largest cable broadcast in the history of cable television. Very impressive outing that night from Brett Favre. I think emotion-wise, I think people were wondering how he was going to handle things, and he was calm and cool you know, a very game effort by Aaron Rodgers that week, I can tell you that. Sacked eight times, 4.5 by Jarren Allen. But on the other hand, Brett wound up coming away with the victory. But I think this is a whole different can of worms here, going into Lambeau Field, where it's almost like, the only thing I compare it to would be like Carson Palmer leaving USC to go to UCLA. Mm-hmm. You know, if he would have come back with the New York Jets, I think he would have got a nice standing ovation and I think the Packer fans would have still wanted to be at the game. I think this brings on a whole different meaning to it. But again, drama, theater, I mean, you want it, you got it in this one. And listen, Minnesota got, what's very interesting what happened to them last week in Pittsburgh. Not that the Steelers haven't done that to other teams. But here's a, again, here's a number just to throw out, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last six games that the Vikings have played, which, of course, excludes opening day, they've had more pass plays than run plays.
With, so Adrian Peterson in the backfield.
Yes, yes. Adrian Peterson, I remember him. He led the league in rushing last year, and there was always that talk, just talk, of how Brett Favre had Adrian Peterson in play-action passing. Well, last week that wasn't the case. I mean, Brett Favre threw the ball 51 times. He was sacked four more times, so 55 pass plays last week opposed to 23 runs. It seems like more and more that Brad Childress is turning things over to him. And not that it's necessarily a bad thing, but as you well know, you've got to have balance in these games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way you beat the Green Bay Packers is trying to run on them. Here's another interesting stat. This is actually almost sounds like a World Series stat from the Phillies and Yankees last night. The last nine quarters of football that the Green Bay Packers have played, they've given up 5 points.
Wow.
Which is
I wouldn't have thought about that. That's amazing.
Yeah, a safety in the Vikings game, they were off. Shut out the Lions and three to the Browns. So not 5 points in nine quarters, kind of odd type of number. But this is going to be a raucous crowd. I know the Packers the last 2 weeks have played the Lions and the Browns, which, you know, don't exactly scare anybody. But the other hand, if you remember how their defense was a year ago, it was really, really a huge disappointment. And I think they'll be coming at Brett early and often. This game is going to be chock full of emotion. But I kind of lean it toward the Packers in this one.
Last question for me, Russell. What do the Patriots have to do statistically the rest of the way to be successful? And when I say successful, I mean go deep into January.
Well, I think it's balance. I say that with every team. I mean, as good as Peyton Manning is, as good as Tom Brady is, as good as Ben Roethlisberger is, you've got to mix up your plays. You've got to keep your defense off the field. Your offense has to work with your defense. This sounds like a Newt Rockne speech, but that's really what it comes down to. Have teams won the Super Bowl with extraordinary defenses? Yes. Have teams won the Super Bowl with extraordinary offenses? Not necessarily, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you look at some of the highest scoring teams. Think right off the top of my head. The Patriots in 2007 didn't win the Super Bowl. The Vikings in 98 didn't even get there. They were the second highest scoring team. The Redskins scored 541 points in 83, and they got squeaked out in the Super Bowl by the Raiders by just 29 points. So if you're going to be heavy one way, the heavy way is to go on defense. But again, you got to have a Ravens-like defense, a Steelers-like defense, a Bears-like defense in the years that they were completely dominant to do it. But I think if the Patriots just get healthy and lean toward a little more balance, and again, they're such a hard team to game plan anyway because you know how Bill Belichick is. I'll throw it 25 times in a row. I'll run it 25 times in a row. Whatever the defense gives you, they're such a hard team to defend. But
it is what it is.
It is what it is, and as long as their young defense starts to come around, they're going to be right. Listen, this was a team that didn't have their quarterback last year and was right in the thick of it. There's no reason to think they're not in the thick of it now with one of the best quarterbacks maybe to ever play.
Russell, as always, we appreciate your time. Take care.
Okay, Chris, talk to you soon.
Take care, man. Russell Baxter from ESPN joining us here on Patriots Playbook. My name is Chris Price. Sitting in for John Rook, you can reach us here at webradio@patriots.com. Send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. We are going to take a very quick break and be right back.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited, but only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape serving trays.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
There we go. I'm getting the hang of this, man. I really am. After what? Only about an hour and a half. I'm here. I'm ready to go. My name is Christopher Price, back here on Patriots Playbook, sitting in for John Rook. Get in touch with us. Email at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. I'm going to read some quick email. Right here we have Michael Claus. Let's see. Following up on Jeff Fisher wearing the Colts jersey, I thought about when you might see Colt or Coach Belichick in enemy laundry. My first thought was that come playoff
so
time.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. My feelings exactly. I think this is. I think honestly, this is a bigger story than it deserves to be. I think Jeff Fisher has built up more than enough currency in Tennessee. He's been there for many years. He is one of, if not the longest tenured coach in the National Football League, has done a very good job over the years with the Tennessee Titans. You know what? I think he gets a little bit of slack on this one. Anyway, Michael Claus says, my thought was that come playoff time, Bill Belichick might show up to a team meeting with a Super Bowl championship cap from another team. Assuming four playoff games here is my pick for motivational caps. He says the Jets in the wild card round, which I think might make sense. We talked a little bit about that.
Yeah,
a little bit earlier with Eric Scalavino. Super Bowl cap, reminder the favorite doesn't always win. Divisional round, Indy. You might win the Indy Super Bowl cap. Three words, guys, Peyton and second half in the championship round. He might wear Pittsburgh Steelers cap.
Any Steelers fans listening, you all suck. Wow.
John Rook has some very strong feelings. I always forget about that. He has some very strong feelings about the Pittsburgh Steelers and their fans. Anyway, he says the Super Bowl cap might be from the New York Giants, and then Michael Claus ends it by saying no words needed in that case as well. We're going to go to an email, another quick email here. Let me see. Talking about home field advantage between the Patriots and the Colts. Nice to see. This is from Ontave. Nice to see the Patriots are once again a dominant power weather team, but after peeking at the Colts' remaining schedule, it's pretty clear that the Patriots will have to win sometime indoors in Indianapolis. It's probable the Colts will win their next two games at home, and let's say the Patriots take care of business at home against the Finns. Then a Week 10 Colts win at home versus the Patriots puts them three games up with six to play. Ontave then goes on to say it looks like the Patriots will end up having to go indoors. He ends his email by saying Patriots better start gearing up their team to win on the carpet. I'm not so sure about that. I still think the Patriots have a pretty good chance, at least when it comes to the next four games anyway. But knocking off, I don't want to say knocking off, but maybe surpassing the Indianapolis Colts, because things get a little bit more difficult for the Colts down the stretch. But we can talk about that more going forward. We've talked a little bit about this. The Patriots, over the next 5 weeks, have a very difficult road, much more difficult than the start of the season or the end of the season. After the bye week on November 8th, Sunday, November 8th, they host Miami at home at 1 o'clock. That's a winnable game for the Patriots, especially when you consider, and we talked a little bit about this with Russell Baxter before, the blueprint, and we also talked this with Eric Scalavino, the blueprint to beat the Colts, or to beat the Dolphins and the Wildcat has been exposed a little bit. There's a story today on Pro Football Talk taken from the New Orleans Times-Picayune saying that New Orleans was able to stuff the Wildcat to the tune of 27 yards on 14 plays. That's an average of just under 2 yards a carry. The Dolphins were averaging 7.1 yards a play on 47 Wildcat snaps before week 7. So you look at that game and you look at the Wildcat offense and you have to like the Patriots' chances. You have to like them a little bit more than last season anyway, when the Patriots were surprised, I think really surprised in here by the Wildcat. The Dolphins ended up running all over them. So you have to like the Patriots Sunday, November 8th at home against the Dolphins. Sunday, November 15th, they travel for a Sunday night game to Indianapolis, to Lucas Oil Stadium. I think that's going to be a little bit tougher. We discussed earlier that Peyton Manning is pretty much, he might not be the MVP at this stage of the season, but he's not too far removed from the discussion. He's at least for my money, in the top, three or four anyway. That's going to be a tough game. It's always tough winning in Indianapolis. And you have to remember, the Patriots last year were right there. And again, last year Manning probably wasn't as good as he is this year because Manning was just coming off the knee surgery. So maybe that's, maybe that's a little bit of a wash. But I think the Patriots have to feel pretty good about their chances going into Indianapolis as long as they are all healthy. One of the most important things about that Indianapolis game, we said it before and I will say it again, is controlling the football, is your ability to impose your will on the Colts, his ability to run the football, to control the tempo, to control the pace, to keep that Indianapolis offense off the field for as long as possible. And I think the best way to do that is to get a steady, sustained running game. The Patriots are going to need that. It's going to be a big week. If the Patriots are able to win this game, they're going to need to get a big week from their running game. I think a lot of it is going to be on the shoulders of Lawrence Maroney. We're going to see how he's going to respond that week. We don't think that Fred Taylor is going to be back for that game. Sammy Morris, if I'm putting money on it right now, he's basically a toss-up at this point to play in that game. The big game for me, the one that really stands out, is that, Sunday, November 22nd, they're home against the Jets. I like that game a lot for several reasons, not the least of which, it's a rematch between Randy Moss and Darrelle Revis, both who talked a little bit before the game and after the game about what they were going to do to each other. Revis appeared to, at times, get the better of Randy Moss. Moss talked after the game and said, oh, there's no such thing as a shutdown corner anymore. I don't know where he's thinking about that. I could be a shutdown corner if I had Brandon Merriweather playing over the top. It's going to be interesting to see those two hook up again. But then for my money, Monday night, November 30th, in New Orleans against the Saints, 8:30 on ESPN, that is going to be the true measuring stick for this Patriots team at this stage of the season. We're going to know at that point if this Patriots team is a Super Bowl contender, a bona fide Super Bowl contender, a legitimate team that has a chance to not only go to Super Bowl 44, but to win Super Bowl 44, because the Saints on both sides of the football right now are doing an awful lot of good stuff. We talked a little bit about this before with Russell Baxter, and he really likes what the Saints are doing. They're winning games. They're winning games difficult. They're blowing teams out. They're winning by running the football. They're winning by throwing the football. And they've been really, really impressive to this stage of the season. I think if you're putting money on it right now, and of course I don't advocate such things, but if you're putting money on it, my money right now would be, if you're looking at one team who has the best chance to go 16-0, and we can start calling up Mercury Morris and we can start discussing things like that, is the New Orleans Saints, because they do play in the NFC South. They play in a very poor division, with the exception of the Atlanta Falcons. you can talk legitimately about running the table when you have that kind of talent in the NFC South. I think for my money, that's the game. That's the measuring stick for the Patriots, for this Patriots team. We're going to see how good they are come November 30th in New Orleans. Then you finish up Sunday, December 6th. You're at Miami. That finishes up that five-game stretch. You have two games against Miami. You have two games against teams that are unbeaten right now anyway, two teams that are 6-0 at this point in the season. And you have three games, two games against Miami and one game against the Jets, that could really decide your fate within the division. So you look at those five games, Miami, Indy, the Jets, New Orleans, and Miami. If the Patriots go 3-2 through that stretch, I think they should be in pretty good shape coming down the stretch, because the last month of the season, you have two games. You have home games against Carolina and Jacksonville, and you have road games against Buffalo and Houston, and you can pretty much pencil that stretch in. It's going to be a good December, at least a good second half of December and early part of January for these New England Patriots. We were looking at a few stories earlier, things that may have jumped out to us online. And the story about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the team that the Patriots really crushed. For my money, it was in a lot of ways more impressive than the 59-0 win over the Tennessee Titans 2 weeks ago here in Foxborough. The win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was really, really a dominating effort by the Patriots. I think the only reason the game wasn't 49-7 was the Patriots' offense looked a little bit almost bored through parts of the second half of that game. I think one of the reasons that Tom Brady did end up throwing those two interceptions was that he may have looked a little bit out of focus. Now Tampa Bay does have a pretty good secondary. Maybe defensively, that's the best thing that they do. But for my money, that Tampa Bay team, we talk a lot about how Oakland is a dysfunctional franchise, a franchise that's completely out of control. You can make a real good argument that Tampa Bay team is not far behind. We saw this story today that Joel Glazer, one of the co-chairs of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and one of the sons of owner Malcolm Glazer, has issued through the team a denial that the team has lost money because of investments with Bernie Madoff, and a denial that the team is for sale. He says, quote, "The report today by WDAE about our family and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is 100% false. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are not, nor have they ever been, for sale. In addition, our family or any of our related companies have never invested one penny with Bernie Madoff. The report is baseless, irresponsible, and slanderous." So he left no doubt as to where the Buccaneers stand on that point. But when it comes to on the field, more than enough people are taking their shots at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, including this story today from, again, this is also from Pro Football Talk, talking about how October has been a very bad month for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've added four losses in a row to the three with which they started the season. In all, they've lost 11 games in a row and counting. And now the Florida Tuskers, that's right, the Florida Tuskers of the UFL are lining up to take their shots at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He says, here
we
go.
That was a disgraceful performance.
Exactly, exactly. Sunday was a disgraceful performance by Tampa Bay. Per the St. Petersburg Time, running back Michael Pittman, who at one point played for the Buccaneers, said that there are some players on his Florida Tuskers team who would, quote, probably tell you, we can beat the Bucs. And then running back Tandon Bell chimed in, I'm one of them. I like the Florida Tuskers. I like the Florida Tuskers an awful lot. For several reasons, not the least of which my man Todd Sauerbrunn plays for them. He punted here in New England for about 2 or 3 months. We became fans of Todd Sauerbrunn. I'm a big fan of Todd Sauerbrunn. He's bumped around the league a little bit. He's gotten a bad rap, I think, but he's a good guy. He's a decent guy, and he's found work again with the Florida Tuskers. Anyway, they asked Tuskers coach Jim Haslett, admits the UFL may not be the National Football League. He thinks his new team is pretty close. And Pro Football Talk adds, and Haslett would know, last year he took over on an interim basis a Rams team that, after upsetting the Redskins and Cowboys on consecutive Sundays, embarked on an 0-10 slide that is now at 17 losses in a row and counting. So tough days down there in Tampa Bay with the Tampa Bay Bucs. Going to get back to the email. This is from, there's no name to it. Let me double check and see if there's a name attached to it here. TG in NJ, I'm assuming that's TG in New Jersey, talking about the Wildcat offense. Hey, guys, the Finns introduced the Wildcat offense to the league last year against the Patriots and beat them. Now everybody is either trying it or at least talking about trying it. The Finns continue to use it, and it seems to be working for them on certain occasions. I tack it up to their personnel who run it better than anything, but there is one player who they drafted to help out with the Wildcat that we haven't seen a lot of this year, and that's Pat White. It's my gut feeling that the Finns will add a new wrinkle to the Wildcat offense with Pat White, and they have been waiting till they play the Patriots to do it. Do you think the Patriots will be ready for it? What's the new wrinkle, you might ask? Well, they haven't really been throwing out of the Wildcat, and maybe Pat White brings that dimension to that type of offense. I think that makes a lot of sense. We talked a little bit about that with Eric Scalavino before, who was nice enough to join us. Eric Scalavino from Patriots.com and Patriots Football Weekly. That's the one thing that we have really not seen the Dolphins do this year in the Wildcat offense, is to do a lot of throwing. And I think if they went to that, I think that would make a lot of sense. Again, from Pro Football Talk today, New Orleans was able to stop the Wildcat offense to the tune of 27 yards on 14 plays. That was running the football. They were able to pass the football out of it. I don't want to say quite easily, but they had a little more success passing the football out of it than they did running the football. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, give us an email, webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. That's 508-543-7482. My name is Christopher Price. I'm sitting in for John Rook here on Patriots Playbook. We're going to take a real quick break and be back right after this.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's
live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
It takes the second time. It always goes the second time. Is it because I'm not pushing the button down at the start? You can keep the
so
music.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. This is what happens when you have a print guy, when you have a writer try and host a show.
And you would think, as somebody who types a lot,
exactly,
that the button would just go right away.
I work for a radio station. Yeah, come on, all this stuff should be ingrained. I love this, by the way, Temple of the Dog. This is.
They must not have cough drops in the blue box across the street. Huh?
Exactly. No, it's all its own. Back here on Patriots Playbook, my name is Christopher Price. Filling in for John Rook, you can send us an email. Send us an email to webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. You can also give us a call at 508-543-7482. I'm not going to sing, but I love this. I love this song. It's a great song.
Thought I had a shot.
That's good stuff, man. I appreciate that. We've got a couple of good news stories out there that we've been able to pull off the web. First off, I want to read to you, good news in Motown, despite the blackout, it's building to be, this is from the National Football Post, it is building to be quite a Sunday at Ford Field for those who actually attend the game and are not kept in the dark by a local TV blackout. The Lions are 4-point favorites over the St. Louis Rams. The team announced earlier today that the game will be blacked out, but the Lions got some good news as quarterback Matthew Stafford, who has not played a game since dislocating his right kneecap on October 4th at Chicago, practiced. So did wide receiver Calvin Johnson. It was the third straight day of practice for Stafford. The Lions are coming off a bye. So what's coming up roses out there in Detroit? Wanted to pass this along, too. Former Patriot fullback Heath Evans went on to the New Orleans Saints, been playing very, very well for the New Orleans Saints this year. They placed him on IR today, Brian Lowe.
Just saw that before I came on down.
That's
here.
That's the saddest story.
Oh, my arm!
Yeah. Well, that's the saddest story.
It's very sad, because you're right. He'd become a touchdown machine this year.
He'd become a fantasy football, and I know this is the show we got coming up after. He'd become a fantasy football, not a staple, but a really good guy you might want to think about adding to your team.
He had a few, with 3 or 4 touchdowns, I think.
He'd done very, very well this year.
Did you see who they signed?
Kyle Eckel. Now, I got to say this, and this is... It's well known amongst my family and friends and colleagues. I am a Heath Evans apologist. I loved Heath Evans. Heath Evans, when he was here, was a great guy. He's still a great guy, but when he was here, he was fantastic to us in the media.
Yep.
I developed a relationship with him. A fantastic, fantastic guy. You just wanted to see, the kind of guy you wanted to see do well.
And just, you're the quintessential role player.
Exactly.
He didn't come in, when he first came in, I'm sure you remember back in 2005, he ran off 2 straight games where they signed him because they basically needed a lead runner. I mean, it was like the year that they had, I think that Mike Cloud got a little bit of run. Yep. And this.
I want to say it was 2005.
Maybe it was 2005, the year after Mike Cloud, 2 years after, whatever it was. He came in, I think it was against Miami, his old team.
Yep.
And
79 yards, I think it was.
Yeah, something like that. And what was the other game? Was it in, he had two, I think he had 2 games.
I want to say, I don't know if it was back-to-back, but he had 2 games where he rushed for about 80-plus yards.
But so that was sort of fluky. But then he settled into a role where, hey, he's a lead blocker. He's a fullback. He can catch a pass every now and then. He can run the ball every now and then. But they sort of had this just – and I thought last year when they had a really good overall team rushing season, they had like 5 or 6 guys who all sort of had their role, whether it be lead runner, inside runner. Different guys at different times of the year did well, and Heath Evans was right in the mix there as far as knowing his role. That's all they ask of you.
Yep.
Know your role. Perform your role. Don't complain. And just go out and do your job, and he did that very well. Now, I saw, when I first saw the news today, I saw first that Kyle Eckel was signed by the Saints. I didn't know about Evans, and I was like, wow, they've got Evans, they've got David Thomas, they've got Kyle Eckel, they got all like the blockers.
A lot of familiar faces,
yeah. And then I saw that the reason they signed Eckel was Evans going on IR. So too bad for him, too bad for them. Would have been kind of cool going down to New Orleans in about a month. Another in the long line of, sort of reunion days that this team is having this year with Denver, of course, and all that. So that's too bad for Evans, too bad for New Orleans, but I'm sure he'll be back.
Such a nice guy.
Very nice guy.
Such a nice guy. Yeah. I'll read you the quick piece. I actually found this on a great football blog that I want to give a plug to, maxfootballblog.com. It says the New Orleans Saints have placed fullback Heath Evans on injured reserve, according to Jeff Duncan of the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Free agent fullback Kyle Eckel was signed to replace Evans on the 53-man roster. Evans signed a 2-year contract with the Saints in the offseason and had 5 carries for 16 yards with 1 touchdown, typical fullback kind of numbers.
Yeah.
Caught 10 passes for 70 yards and a pair of touchdowns through the team's first 6 games.
Okay, he had
3 touchdowns. 3 touchdowns through the first 6 games for Heath Evans. He tore ACL in his right knee during the Saints' 46-34 win over the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. That's just that's the saddest story I'm going to read today.
Yeah, you know, it's you play in the NFL every now and then.
It's going to happen.
He's been pretty durable.
Exactly, he's been durable. And he's actually talked about this on a couple of occasions where he almost considers himself lucky. He has not had a season ending.
Shouldn't have opened his mouth.
Exactly. Yeah, not knock on wood. The other story I want to get to here before we change gears really quickly. I love The Onion. I read The Onion all the time. I subscribe to their Twitter feed on my own Twitter feed. I'll plug it now. Twitter.com/CapeLeaguer. If you don't subscribe to The Onion Twitter feed, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's absolutely fantastic. And they'll have sports stories up there. And the sports story they have up there now is headline, "Even British able to see holes in Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense." And I'll read you part of the story here. Despite their lack of experience watching American football and their unfamiliarity with all but the most basic principles of the sport, the local crowd attending the NFL game last Sunday at London's Wembley Stadium had little trouble identifying key weaknesses in the Buccaneers' defense as the Patriots cruised to a 35-7 victory. My word, that safety. Man, has he lost containment again? And the Bucs are just getting, what's the word, blocked right out of their feet on nearly every play. Attendee Martin Hollings said as the Patriots running back Lawrence Maroney broke out for a 14-yard run. Oh, I say, poor show.
Oh, my God, that is funny.
Get that laugh track going.
I don't know. I just love The Onion. It sticks out for me. I'm a huge fan of The Onion.
Well, there you go. And Twitter is a perfect opportunity for you to make sure they're you're on in tune with what they've got.
Exactly.
Such as a story that fits for the radio show.
Perfect stuff.
Perfect.
If you want to get in touch with me, if you want to follow my Twitter feed for all sorts of good Patriot stuff and I'm sure a few things. That's like five times we've done that, hasn't it?
Listen,
that's,
Jason,
it's been a 2-hour show. We've had to stretch a little bit.
If you're going to invite the guy to do the show, the least you got to expect, you got to allow for
of
a
course,
little bit of
play. It's all in fun.
Oh, it's all in fun.
I follow his Twitter feed.
Well, there you go.
And I tweeted today that I was going to be filling in for John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
See, you
did
should
you
have
Twitter?
A, you should have
or did
a Twitter
you tweet?
Feed.
I tweeted.
I tweeted.
It's a fantastic. It really is.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this with Eric a little bit earlier off the air, that it's a great way for us in the media to get really quick bits of information out to people at a moment's notice. Like I was able to put, 13 guys missing in practice today, including Wes Welker. No, I'm sorry, not Wes Welker, but Julian Edelman, Randy Moss.
Yeah.
It's a really quick way, a really direct way for us to get really, timely little bites of information out to the public in a fast fashion.
It certainly is. I follow some Twitter feeds. I technically have one, but I more just have it to follow some others. I don't really use mine, but I suppose I should.
Which I get a kick out of because I have people who follow me, and I've never once posted a thing.
I have people. We're pretty much in the same boat. Maybe I'll have to do a fantasy lowdown one.
That's perfect.
Maybe that's what I'll have to do.
It is. It's great. It's a great way to get information out there. It's if people are looking to follow you. And I know there are a lot of people out there who use it for BS reasons. Hey, I'm eating a chocolate cake.
Right.
And they have the picture. Right. And that's just
if you can sift through those for the real pertinent information, it's worthwhile.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, the important thing is, again, I use it to get my stuff out there. I don't tell people, hey, I just had a cheese sandwich. Look
right.
at me. I get it out to people and I say, look, this is what you should know. Right. This is what's happening in the Patriots locker room. These are the important things when it comes to this team.
Somehow before 2009 and then I guess before like 2004 when Facebook came into the realm, we were all able to lead our lives without knowing exactly what different people had for lunch or what time people are mowing their lawn and what, their baby is doing at a certain moment. Somehow we were able to lead our lives. Not to make light of Twitter and Facebook because I'm in the minority, but, that somehow we got by. But you're right.
Come on, Bela. We all know that back in the day at Brandeis on your little AOL Instant Messenger, you had, I am in class right now. I am studying. I am at the dining hall.
Was that you I was IMing those days?
Probably.
Oh, that was you? Oh, interesting.
What's coming up? What do you got?
What's coming up on the Fantasy Lowdown? Well, we as always, we've just got different storylines and all that. Vince Young becoming the starting quarterback of Tennessee. Could he be a guy that, you need to have your eye on in fantasy? A lot of these rookie running backs sort of now, all of a sudden, LeSean McCoy, Beanie Wells, Sean Green, whether for injury or whatever, it seems like this is the week. There was about 4 or 5 weeks ago, there was that one week where starting quarterback changes were taking place. There were like 4 or 5 of them. I feel like this week we're getting a little bit of a a shift in rookie running backs. We'll talk a little bit about that. Already got some emails to get to at webradio@patriots.com. So we've got a bunch of different topics. Going to talk a little bit about my experience in London, because a lot of the people who email us and are in our fantasy leagues are some of these Patriots fans out in London that I had a chance to meet. That was
speaking of
very exciting. Speaking of what?
Truck horn.
Go for it. I didn't say I don't do it myself. So we got a jam-packed hour coming up. We definitely want to hear from you. We definitely want to talk about it. Just because the Patriots aren't playing, as we find out through all the programming here on Patriots.com, does not mean it's a quiet week here on the radio waves.
Whenever I get a chance to talk with you, I ask you, and we've done this a couple of times, fantasy questions. And I want to ask you, I want to take advantage of this. I want to ask you a fantasy question here. I have, and this should tell you, I have a decent team this year.
Yeah.
My backup quarterback is Jake Delhomme, and I'm absolutely terrified that something is going to happen. My starting quarterback isn't much better. It's Tony Romo.
But
I've been getting great performances out of my running backs. Yeah. I have Frank Gore and Adrian Peterson. I'm in good shape there.
Yeah.
I'm terrified that something's going to happen to Romo, and I'm going to have to play Jake Delhomme. Is there another quarterback, a low-end quarterback out there that you can recommend to me? Maybe Vince Young. Is he one of those guys who I should go out and take a flyer on?
Not really. Okay. But here's the thing. With Jake Delhomme, I mean, if you ever have to use Jake Delhomme, first of all, he's probably going to be benched soon enough by Carolina, which, honestly, you're better off starting Jake Delhomme when he's benched by his actual team than when he's actually starting, because he's been giving you negative points if you've had to start him. So stay away. Stay away from him. As far as who, you know, guys that are, you know, sort of underrated to look at, I kind of was on the Chad Henne wave as like you said, a mid-tier guy who's probably available. He's had reasonable numbers. I compare him a little bit to Tom Brady back in 2001 when Tom Brady. I'm not saying the Dolphins and Chad Henne are winning the Super Bowl this year, but a game manager.
He's not going to throw a lot of picks. He's not going to have great numbers, he's not going
to
hurt.
You can't afford to have Jake Delhomme, because he's going to get you. There's a better chance he's going to get you negative than positive points. Chad Henne might not get you a ton of positive points. He's just not throwing the picks. He might not go 4 touchdowns, no interceptions on any given week. Might be more like 1-0 or 2-1 or something like that. Not a ton of yardage. He's definitely a guy to think of. David Garrard is also a guy.
Really?
He's steadily, quietly, he puts up pretty good numbers. That offense revolves around Maurice Jones-Drew, but if you have that run, if Jacksonville's team that has that running game, so that opens things up for the offense and for Garrard, keep him in mind. He's probably not on the waiver wire. You might have to trade for him.
But he's not going to kill me. That's the important thing. And that's what I want to stay away from. Yep. I want to steer clear of guys who are going to sink my team, who are going to give me negative yards. I want to steer clear of guys like that. I don't want guys like Delhomme who, you know, I could start a cardboard box and not get me any yardage, you know, not get me any points. But I just don't want to have a guy who's going to take points away from my team.
Right. Week in, week out, he seems to be that guy. And then here's another one to keep in mind. You could probably pick this guy up. Alex Smith.
Really?
Alex Smith.
I didn't even think about that. That's a good one.
This week against Indianapolis, I don't really like him. Pick him up now if you can. You obviously won't have to start him right now. You got Romo. Pick him up if you can. I think he's got a chance. I think sometimes he's like, he's all of a sudden a reclamation prize. He's not a number one guy anymore, number one overall pick. Pick him up and have some patience.
Cool. Good to know. Well, we will be where I'm going to be. I did it again. Oh, just in time for me to get out of here.
You got
B-Lo coughing. You have me pulling the cord out of. Oh, man. Are you ever going to ask me back to do this show ever again?
Of course I am.
You're going to childproof the room before I get back in here, aren't you?
He needs someone to press the horn button.
I'm going to steer clear here. I'm going to do the rest of the show like
this. What I'm going to do? I'm going to wire the horn to the on button for the microphone.
just have a little sign right here before. Press this before you start talking.
Besides, Chris, didn't I tell you John's out again next Thursday?
I may be back on board. My name is Chris Price.
Just kidding, 2 weeks.
It's been a lot of fun here on Patriots Playbook. I want to thank Eric Scalavino. I want to thank Justin.
Jason.
I'm going to go home and take a nap.
That's bad.
I've had a lot of fun here on Patriots Playbook. Stay tuned for Fantasy
Start over again with who you're thanking.
Jason.
There you go.